Welcome to Monday Morning Murder in the News with Alyssa Carroll.
Good morning, heathens. Happy Murder in the News Monday. I hope everyone had a great weekend, those that worked. Thank you for your sacrifice. So let's jump right in. We have WXII12.com, the Piedmont Triad, if you will. Title reads, She Didn't Give Up. 85-year-old woman in Idaho kills home intruder. So, new details have emerged about a home invasion in Bingham County, Idaho, where an elderly woman, despite being severely injured, managed to kill the intruder who was known to her. Bingham County Prosecutor Ryan Jolly said that Derek Condon targeted the home of 85-year-old Christine Jinian, and he was prepared to commit acts of violence or even kill when he entered her home. He knew Condon's brother more than him, but he was known to her. He had interacted with her both at her pawn shop, at her business that she owned, and, you know, also had some interaction at the gun range with her, Jolly said. Good girl. It appears that he picked her specifically because he knew her and knew she likely would have valuables in her home. The break-in occurred on March 13th, so a little over a month ago. A local news station was on the scene when law enforcement responded to the call. According to the prosecutor's office, on the night of the break-in, the intruder, Condon, came prepared with a ski mask, rope, two pairs of handcuffs, and multiple firearms. Good Lord. He also parked his car far enough down the road from the victim's homes so it wouldn't be seen. The victim's home, one home. So it wouldn't be seen. Quote, she took the steps to defend herself because she didn't know if anybody else would, Jolly said. And then I find it so heroic that she didn't give up once. Once she fired and then he started firing on her, she didn't give up. Even though she was hit multiple times, she stayed there. She kept fighting for her life. The prosecuting attorney stated that the lady acted in justifiable self-defense and they would not be seeking any charges because they shouldn't. Officials also tell us that she is currently in a recovery center and is expected to be okay, which at her age, the prosecuting attorney said is nothing short of incredible. 39-year-old Derek Condon died from his injuries. The woman acted in justifiable self-defense, and we will not seek any charges, the attorney said. That's just a repeat. Anyway, so, yeah, you know, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. Okay, our next article comes from KWCH 12 News, and the title reads, Update. OSBI confirms two dead bodies found in Texas County, Oklahoma. So this is, we talked about this the last time. This is in western Oklahoma and Kansas, like in the far panhandle part. But the article is coming out of Wichita, Kansas, okay? Updated April 14th. The Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, FBI, Texas County Sheriff's Department, and the Office of the Oklahoma Chief Medical Examiner recovered two deceased persons in rural Texas County on Sunday, April 4th. Both individuals will be transported to the medical examiner's office to determine identification as well as cause and manner of death. This is an ongoing investigation. So according to the OSBI, four people have been arrested on suspicion of two counts of first-degree murder in connection to the two missing Kansas women, Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. All four individuals were booked into the Texas County Jail on two counts of first-degree murder, two counts of kidnapping, and one count of conspiracy to commit murder in the first degree. The OSBI says 43-year-old Tad Burt Cullum, 54-year-old Tiffany Michelle Adams, 50-year-old Cole Earl Twombly, and 44-year-old Cora Twombly were arrested in Texas and Cimarron counties in Oklahoma. The Oklahoma Highway Patrol canceled their endangered missing advisory for Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly Saturday night. The OSBI says they are currently working with law enforcement to locate Butler and Kelly. Of course, now we know they have been located. So another article that goes along with this update that is a newer update comes from ABC News. It's abc3340.com. And the title reads, "Affidavit reveals new details in the disappearance and death of two women in Oklahoma." So a new affidavit sheds more light on the disappearance of 27-year-old Veronica Butler and 39-year-old Jillian Kelly in Oklahoma. Both young ladies, obviously, by the way, beautiful. So the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation originally reported the pair as missing on March 30th after Kelly and Butler's vehicle was found abandoned near the Four Corners region. Butler and Kelly were originally from Kansas. Four individuals were arrested in connection to this case. And we've already been through all the names. Two guys, two girls. Adams was the mother of Wrangler Rickman, who was the father of Butler's two children. So if memory serves, forgive me if I'm misremembering. But I feel like I said this might have had something to do with shared children custody things or something. So Adams was the mother of Wrangler Rickman, who is the father of Butler's two children. The affidavit stated Adams purchased three prepaid cell phones and all three were at the area where Butler's car was found abandoned. After Butler's and Kelly's disappearance, the phone numbers moved to a property owned by Jamie Beasley in an area below a dam in a pasture, according to the affidavit. Police said concrete had been moved in the area below the dam where it was discovered that there was a hole that had been dug and then filled back in. The property owner, Beasley, said the dirt work was done with a skid steer by Cullum, Adams' boyfriend. Cullum rents pasture that's owned by Beasley for cattle grazing and asked if he could cut down a tree, remove a stump, bury some concrete, and do some dirt work below the dam. This is somewhat common normal farm, you know, ranch stuff. So Beasley agreed to allow Cullum to do the work, according to the affidavit, and knew that Cullum left his skid steer on the property the night of March 29th. However, the following morning, the skid steer was gone. On Sunday, March 31st, Cullum told Beasley that people were looking at him for the disappearance of those two girls. According to the affidavit, he told Beasley that skid steer tracks on the property with no skid steer in sight looked bad. Beasley said if anyone asked, he'd tell them Cullum had done tree and dirt work for him. On April 13th, law enforcement agents executed a search warrant on Beasley's property. The area where Cullum had done dirt work was excavated and Butler's and Kelly's bodies were found. Mm-hmm. Investigators also found a stun gun on the site. The affidavit stated Adams had searched for gun shops on her cell phone. A search of local gun shops showed Adams bought five stun guns at a store in Guymon on March 23rd. That's Guymon, Oklahoma. After Adams was arrested on April 13th, she stated she was responsible for the two women's death. The affidavit noted that after a hearing that was scheduled for April 17th, Butler would have potentially been granted unsupervised visitation with her children. After a hearing that was scheduled, Butler would have potentially been granted unsupervised visitation with her children. And I would say, now that kind of changes the narrative there. Did she only have supervised visitation with her children? And if so, why? Why? The affidavit also stated that when Cullum was arrested, he had a rifle, ammunition, body armor, and a go bag prepared at his home. That's the whole story. But regardless, yeah, co-parenting not going so well. Our next article was sent to me by one of my wonderful listeners, and it is from KARE11.com, Care 11, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the Twin Cities. Title reads, "Human head was found in an apartment refrigerator. The resident is charged with murder." God, don't you hate it when they find the decapitated heads in your refrigerators? So annoying. Nicholas McGee, 45, was arrested Thursday afternoon and also charged with robbery, concealment of a human corpse, and tampering with evidence, city police said. Apparently, this is out of New York. A New York City man has been charged with murder in connection with the discovery of a human head and body parts in a Brooklyn apartment refrigerator, police said Friday. Gosh, I thought Brooklyn was getting more upscale. Nicholas McGee, 45, was arrested Thursday afternoon and also charged with robbery, concealment of a human corpse, and tampering with evidence, city police said in a news release. The remains of 40-year-old Kasheen Gelzer were found January 22nd in an apartment McGee shared with Heather Steins, 45, who was arrested on a charge of concealment of a human corpse. Officers said they responded to a request for a wellness check at the apartment and found multiple black bags with body parts in the refrigerator and freezer. Medical examiners were later able to identify Gelzer through fingerprints, according to a criminal complaint. You know, side note, I can stomach quite a bit, but man, dismemberment. I'm a very, very visual person. Those of you who are with me already get it, but those of you who don't just see these gore fest movies in your head, like against our will, you know, my brain kind of goes to where I'm like, could I do that? Could I just sit there and like saw on, you know, and nope, I don't know how people do that. I just don't. Police did not provide additional details about the case Friday, including how and when Gelzer was killed. Well, if parts of his body were in the refrigerator and it didn't stink to high hell, I'd say that he didn't die too terribly long before that. McGee was scheduled to appear in court Friday. The case was not yet in online court records, and the district attorney's office said it did not have information about his legal representation. I'm telling you, it takes a whole different kind of person to be able to dismember people. And then I know we have like autopsy techs and medical examiners and all of the people in forensics and all these things and like the autopsy. There's a guy that I follow on Instagram. You know what? I'm sitting here reading news articles off my phone and I'll just tell you exactly what his account is. But he is an autopsy person coming out of Little Rock, Arkansas. And he apparently just does, he can cut into, but they're already dead. I don't know. The account is big_led73, big_led73. He is an autopsy tech out of Little Rock, Arkansas. And if you follow him on Instagram, he is very entertaining, but he's also very informational. But the point is that I don't even think I could be an autopsy tech. I did not mean to just throw out like free advertisement for the autopsy guy, but he is awesome. I'm just rambling. Moving on. Our next article comes from KSNT.com. Title reads, Missouri Mushroom Hunters Find Human Remains. Oh, goody. My state. Independence, Missouri. Okay, not close. It is morel season once again. And with it, the continuation of an established pattern. A person goes into the woods looking for mushrooms, instead discovering human remains. God, guys, don't you hate it when you're mushroom hunting and you discover human remains? The most recent example happened Tuesday in Independence off the Rock Creek Trail, a wet area viewed as a potential prime search spot for mushroom hunters. Independence, Missouri, by the way, is south, southeast-ish-esque of Kansas City. It's very close to Kansas City. It is Mormon Mecca. Independence, Missouri is. We don't want them to come here in droves, but that's beside the point. So, the area is basically residential with the remains found nearly in view of the public walking trail. You could not even dump the remains far enough away? Come on. Quote, you get back in here, and it's almost like being down at the lake or something, Wes Heavener, a neighbor, said. Heavener lives on a floodplain, two houses down from where the remains were found. He said his neighbor made the discovery, a skull below a group of trees. Quote, From what they told me, there was no flesh or hair or anything on it, Huebner said. He was just in there mushroom hunting, and he had some in a bag, so yeah, he was mushroom hunting, he said. It's not an uncommon occurrence, echoing discoveries like in 2023, when mushroom hunters found the remains in Davies County, later identified as Skylar Ware. In 2017, mushroom hunter Keith Todd found human remains in Cass County, which were later identified as Jessica Runyon's and discovered nearby Kara Kopetsky. They were murder victims hidden by Kyler Yust, K-Y-L-R, Yust, discovered by a forager who recounted the situation during Yust's trial. Quote, "What were you looking for?" prosecutors asked at the Cass County Courthouse in April 2021. "I was looking for mushrooms," Todd said. "What did you find?" the prosecutor said. "What did I find?" Todd repeated. "Correct," the prosecutor responded. "I found Kara and Jesse," Todd said. The mushroom discovery connections are not lost on neighbors in Independence. Quote, "I think that happens all the time, anywhere," one neighbor said about mushroom hunters finding bodies. "And I've seen homeless people down there a number of times. There's a lot of transients that come and go back in there," Huebner said. "I've never been back in there. I've been here 10 years and I had no reason to go back in there," he said. "It's probably good for mushroom hunting, right?" Fox 4's Jacob Kittlestad asked. He responded, "I would think, yeah, he had found mushrooms. Then he found something he didn't want to. He was really upset over it," end quote, Huebner said. A spokesperson for Independence Police said it could be some time before they're able to identify the remains because of their level of decomposition. I mean, if there's no hair, no flesh, nothing, it's probably just bone. Investigators are currently not publicly sharing theories on a cause of death. That sucks. I get it. I know they need to keep things private for their investigations, but sometimes I'm just nosy. Our next article, shared to me by someone outside of the U.S., so to my international listeners, I love you guys. Keep sending me your news stuff. This comes from 9news.com.au. Title reads, "Teen who allegedly carried out Sydney church stabbing attack had fingers cut off." Okay. A 16-year-old boy who allegedly stabbed a bishop and a father at an Orthodox Christian church in Sydney's West had his fingers cut off during the attack. NSW Premier Chris Minns confirmed the information with 2GB's Chris O'Keefe, but did not clarify whether the teen severed his own fingers or if it was done to him. Disturbing. Quote, "The information we have is that it happened in the commission of the crime, not to him," he said. Interesting. The teen was known to police and was released on a good behavior bond after being caught with a knife at a train station last November. The premier also confirmed reports the teenager had been found with a knife at school in 2020. The attack at the Christ the Good Shepherd Church in Wakeley sparked such tremendous outrage that by the time police arrived, they were forced to bunker inside the building to protect the arrested teenager. In audio obtained by 9 News, a responding paramedic can be heard calling for more backup to contain the crowd. Quote, "I currently need more police to attend," a paramedic tells the operator, excuse me. Quote, "The roads are blocked with hundreds of people." Bishop Mari Emmanuel was giving a sermon, which was being live streamed on the internet, when the 16-year-old approached and allegedly stabbed him multiple times just after 7 p.m. on Wednesday. Father Isaac Royal was also stabbed, police said. Bless. Both Emmanuel and Royal were taken to hospital with injuries that were not life-threatening. Well, that's good. Parishioners launched on the teenager, doing a fantastic job to tackle and apprehend him until police arrived, Acting Assistant Commissioner Andrew Holland said in a press conference close to midnight. However, Holland said an emotional crowd quickly built outside. Earlier, Mins chaired an urgent crisis control meeting with leaders from multiple faiths, all agreeing to a call for calm. That's interesting. Upwards of 100 police and more than 30 police vehicles swarmed the area, including specialist officers and the police helicopter. And then here's a, I don't know if this is a tweet or I'm sorry, an X. I don't know. What are we calling it these days? But it's something that was shared via social media. It looks like Twitter. And it just says, "Dear brothers and sisters, our beloved bishop, His Grace, Mar Mari Emmanuel, and Father Isaac have been admitted to hospital. They are in a stable condition. We ask for your prayers at this time. It is also the bishop's and father's wishes that you also pray for the perpetrator. Generous. We also kindly ask anyone at the church premises to leave in peace as our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, teaches us. Thank you." So police clashed with the group outside of the church with a number of officers injured and police vehicles. A constable was hit with a metal object and suffered a twisted knee and a chipped tooth. Another constable sustained facial injuries after he was hit with a brick and a fence paling. Good Lord. A third officer received several stitches for a laceration to her arm. All have been released from the hospital. It took hours for the police to get the situation under control. Footage from the scene showed capsicum spray being used. Like pepper spray, being used at one stage to try to disperse the crowd. It also appeared that police at one point used a ladder to break down a door in order to reach ambulance workers who were sheltering behind it. What on earth? Why was there a ginormous riot? The boy suffered. Okay, by the time it was deemed safe enough to remove the teenager from the church, police whisked him away to an undisclosed location for his own safety, Holland said. And side note, as I'm remembering that I'm sitting here going, why was there a riot? I think maybe we're just so used to it in the U.S. You know, it's more like, oh, there was a stabbing in there. I'm getting the hell out of here. You know, I think maybe we're just numb to it. That's kind of sad. Anyway, back into it. So the boy suffered quite severe hand injuries and was fairly upset and fairly distraught. But I mean, he went in there to try to shank some religious leaders. You know, that's not cool. Quote, "He asked to speak to his parents at this stage and we're making those arrangements," Holland said. Premier disturbed, mayor calls for calm. So Mins described the scene of the church as disturbing. A lot of emotion involved. Please clear the area. Let the police do their work. I know this is what the bishop would have wanted. Terrible thing that could happen. Anyway, I'm glad that he was stopped before there was any more, before he could hurt anyone else. My Lord. Oh, okay. So here's some more information on those two women from Oklahoma. Sorry this is out of order, but like I told you, I don't read them ahead of time. So I just open them and I leave them open in my Safari and they build up and then I read them to you. We experience these together. So this is coming from KY3.com, KY3, the place to be. Title reads, "Members of self-proclaimed anti-government group, their name being God's Misfits, held in killings of Kansas women." So the plot thickens, my guys, the plot thickens. This article is coming out of Oklahoma City. Two Kansas women who vanished as they tried to pick up their children for a birthday party 2 weeks ago were killed over a custody dispute. You're welcome. You're welcome. Involving a group of anti-government Oklahomans calling themselves God's Misfits, authorities said Monday. Their vehicle was found March 30th along a rural Oklahoma highway with ample evidence of a bloody confrontation, setting off a multi-agency effort to secure the children's safety while searching for the women and avoiding more violence. Veronica and Jillian of Hugoton, Kansas. So Hugoton, Kansas, I mean, you're talking not too far from the Colorado border. I know where a lot of places are in the middle and in the south and all of that because, again, married to a truck driver, so just sort of geographically familiar with the continental United States. Although, I do try to pay attention in my research when our subjects are coming from other countries to pay attention to the local stuff just out of respect, you know. Anyway, so Veronica and Jillian of Hugoton, Kansas, had arranged with the grandmother of Butler's two children to meet at a highway intersection on the morning of March 30th and pick up the 6- and 8-year-old. Quote, "This case did not end the way we had hoped. It's certainly been a tragedy for everyone involved," Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation Director Angela Spurlock said. And again, the four people arrested Saturday on charges of kidnapping and first-degree murder are the grandmother, Tiffany Adams, her boyfriend, Tad Cullum, Cora Twombly, and her husband, Cole Twombly, all meet regularly with several others in a group they call God's Misfits, their arrest affidavits said. So relatives of Tad Cullum, Tad being the boyfriend of the grandmother, biological grandmother of the children, and the Twomblys did not immediately return phone messages seeking comment. Tiffany Adams' stepmother, Elise, said she had no information on the case. Butler's family found the vehicle just a few miles from the meetup spot after the women missed the party in Kansas. It was a gruesome scene. Quote, "Blood was found on the roadway and the edge of the roadway. Butler's glasses were also found in the roadway south of the vehicle near a broken hammer. I mean, I'd be dead without my glasses. A pistol magazine was found inside Kelly's purse at the scene, but no pistol was found. Investigators gathered evidence that the killings were planned, with Adams buying prepaid burner phones to communicate and 5 stun guns at a nearby store. Her internet searches included asking about pain levels using the weapons. Probably looking to see what would hurt worse, I don't know. A teenage witness told authorities that Cora Twombly said that at one point, quote, "The plan was to throw an anvil through Butler's windshield while driving, making it look like an accident because anvils regularly fall off of work vehicles." I think you're watching, you need to put the Looney Tunes away. The affidavits said Butler and Adams were in a problematic custody battle. Adams' son was in a rehabilitation facility hours away in Oklahoma City, and Butler was allowed only supervised visits each Saturday. Kelly, the wife of a pastor in Hugoton, was Butler's court-authorized choice to supervise visitations. What was going on that she still had to have supervised visitations? It's none of my business, but this is what I think about. The Oklahoma Court of Civil Appeals had directed a trial judge in 2022 to give the children's parents shared custody. The ruling described them as very young and immature parents who accused each other of inappropriate behavior and choices, but said the children are nurtured and comforted by mother and happy and excited to be with father. Okay. Butler's request for more time with her children and unsupervised visitation was likely to be granted at a hearing in April, Butler's attorney told investigators. She was going to get unsupervised visitation and Grandma didn't want that. Grandma of their dad didn't want that. The mom of the dad. On March 23rd, with a court date looming, Adams bought the stun guns. On March 29th, Cullum used heavy equipment to dig a hole in the pasture he rented. Okay, we talked about that, not far from the meetup site. Authorities wouldn't say at Monday's news conference where the bodies were found. Well, we already know where they were found. It isn't entirely clear where the children were during the search. Adams told investigators that she had left them in the care of another couple on March 29th and 30th. The affidavits said that couple regularly hosted the God's Misfits meetings. That's just like kind of giving me Ruby Frankie vibes. Authorities said the affidavits weren't unsealed until after the children's safety was assured. Quote, "We were successful. No shots were fired and the children were kept out of harm's way." Oh. The four people charged are being held without bond in the Texas County Jail pending court appearances Wednesday. Court records don't indicate whether any have an attorney to speak on their behalf. This case is tragic. You have two people who are dead and four people who committed an absolutely brutal crime. I mean, that it just kind of gives me the grandma really did not want their mother to have unsupervised visitation. And it just makes me wonder why. And I'm not assuming bad things. I'm not already trying to judge. I want to know innocently what the circumstances were that the mom just didn't have her kids, if the dad's in jail or whatever's going on. Why does grandma have custody? And then grandma's in some weird cult shit? Okay. Then she really did not want that mom to have custody, meaning was she like, you know, trying to recruit the children into that stuff? I don't know. I just would like to know more. And I also didn't realize I had so many articles. I may have to do a Friday morning one just because you guys have sent me so many and I don't want to ignore any of them because they're all good. So if I can, if I have time, blah, 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 then I'll try to read the rest of them for a Friday. So that way everybody's articles get put in here. But I wanted to give you a couple of updates of some ongoing things, right? So I don't know if you're obsessed with the Madeline Soto case like I am. I'm super obsessed. And so as I'm working my 9-to-5, I also will have like Court TV, YouTube stuff that I listen to while I'm working because I'm trying to keep up with cases. You know, I'm working for you guys. I'm working for you guys. And so I kind of already knew this situation, but I didn't know if you guys kept up with all of that. So I just thought I'd let you know. So the article is Fox35Orlando.com. Madeline Soto updates suspect Stephen Stearns complains about jail, sleeping on concrete during the transport. And so he's in the back of the squad car, okay? And the officer works with the sheriff's department, deputy, is in the front with his little sheriff hat on. And this dude knows why this guy is in the back of that car. He knows why. And he's talking to him like, I don't know, kudos to the driver. Anyway. So Stephen Stearns, the primary suspect in the disappearance and death of 13-year-old Madeline Soto, talked with a Florida deputy about the conditions inside the jail, cough drops, and music he likes, according to newly released dash cam video. Again, the driver just absolutely yes. The video was captured on the morning of March 1st, 2024, as Stearns was transferred from the Orange County Jail to the Osceola County Jail, where he was booked on charges of sexual battery and possession of child sex abuse material. It depicts Stearns just hours before Madeline Soto's body was ultimately found in a grassy area in Osceola County, 5 days after she was reported missing. It depicts him just hours before her body was found. Does anyone know if there's any chance that he told them where she was? There's no way he told them where she was. I can't believe I can't remember. Stearns has since been charged with 60 plus counts of sexual battery, molestation, and possession of child pornography. He is considered the prime suspect in Soto's disappearance of death, but has not been arrested or charged with her disappearance or death. So we all believe it, we all whatever, but they just haven't officially. What they're doing is we call that CYA, cover your ass. They want to make sure they have everything on lock before they start letting all of these things out. I get it. I really do. I get it. Because we don't want him to miss out on the next part of his journey in prison. You get what I'm saying? We don't want him to miss out on that. That's a special moment. But he's considered the prime suspect. So officials said everyone who knew Madeline Soto is considered a suspect until being ruled out. Jennifer Soto, Madeline's mom, has not been arrested, charged, or named as a suspect in her daughter's disappearance or death. And I do believe I heard that the mom is cooperating with police. So here's to hoping she didn't know. But here's the cool stuff. During the 27-minute drive, Stearns primarily looks out the window, he stares forward, he appears to look down, and by down, well, he looks down, but he also just looks so defeated. The pity party on his face, guys, is immaculate. While in the back of the deputy's patrol vehicle. So, however, there were moments where Stearns and the deputy transporting him shared casual conversation. As soon as Stearns is placed in the back of the patrol vehicle, he appears to complain about his night in jail. Oh, guys, you guys ready to get your the world's smallest violin? Get them ready to play the world's saddest song, okay? Quote, couldn't regulate, sleeping on bare metal. First night I was on concrete floor using toilet paper for a pillow. Stearns can be heard telling the deputy, oh. He also said he had to beg for a blanket or a pad to sleep on. Oh. According to the video timestamp, Stearns was picked up during the 9 a.m. hour. That afternoon, however, Soto's body would be found in St. Cloud. During the write-up, the deputy asks Stearns if the temperature in the vehicle is okay. At another moment, the two share a brief conversation about cough drops. I do remember the conversation about cough drops. The driver was asking him if he had ever had the cough drops where you bite into them and there's like the more liquidy gel kind of center or whatever. That's what he was talking about. It was super cute. As they got closer to Osceola County, the deputy asked Stearns about his favorite music. All kinds, he said, before mentioning classical music, which appears to surprise the deputy. Eventually, the deputy told Stearns that he was being booked on 2 arrest warrants and would inform him of the specifics after some processes were completed. As the deputy backs up into the parking space, reporters can be seen outside waiting for Stearns to be walked up from the vehicle into the jail. Stearns did not respond to anyone's questions, including those from Fox 35's Amanda McKenzie. So anyway, the update is that, like, before they even found Madeline's body, he's bitching about sleeping on the floor in the jail cell. Boo-hoo. Okay, so then the last one that we're going to go over here is from EastIdahoNews.com. Why? Because you know Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell are always in the news. So we are going through his trial now, right? I'm doing the best I can to try to keep up with all of it. So the title of this one says, Live Update, Steamy Text Messages Revealed on Day 7 of Chad Daybell Trial. So the format of this article, by the way, is kind of a little bit different, so bear with me here. But it says 11:53 a.m., messages from July 28th, Lori to Chad. Are you mad? Sad? What? Chad to Lori. I'm doing okay, just no privacy here to hardly text, and I'm missing you immensely. I feel good about the trip. Lori back to Chad. I need a distraction while I'm waiting for you. I love you. Chad to Lori. Absolutely. I think you'll have a fun time. Hart says Lori was going to take a trip with Alex and Melanie Boudreaux to Southern California. Chad is showing little emotion in the courtroom. No, he's still the toad. Okay. So Chad texts Lori on July 26th. I'm home, missing you immensely and feeling very tired, but I had a splendid time with you, my love. I will text again soon. An hour later, Chad texts. Tonight, I figured out who I feel like. I'm a grown-up version of Harry Potter, who has to live with the Dudleys in his little space under the stairs. Every few weeks, I get to escape and have amazing adventures with my goddess lover. No, he did not. But then I have to return to my place under the stairs, feeling trapped, but I sense permanent freedom is coming. End quote. Texts on July 22nd. Chad to Lori. Love you. Going with Garth in an hour to see the other side of heaven too. Missing you desperately, but so excited to be with you. Lori back to Chad. I love you. You will enjoy the scenery. Looks like Kauai a lot. My bad, apologies. Lori to Chad. Hopefully, we will be there someday soon together. He responded, that is the plan and my greatest desire. Then after the movie, Chad texts her, hi, darling. Back from the movie. We enjoyed it. I look forward to being on a tropical island with you! Exclamation point. And then it says, Hart says Chad and Lori had a clear plan to be with each other together and forever. They were both begging God for that to happen. Tammy Daybell was alive when these messages are being exchanged. Blake asks if there was ever any indication of Chad planning to get divorced or separated. No, there was not. We all know that there was not. So just a couple more, and then I'm going to let you go. So now we see messages from July 21st. Lori texting Chad, "It's making me so happy to read about our life that I'm finally going to dance. Missing you and loving you from afar." And then Lori to Chad, "It was great. I feel free again. I love you more than ever and can't wait to be with you forever. I'm begging father and mother. That's my job tonight." Chad back to Lori, "I will be right beside you, begging just as much. I need you desperately." 3 exclamation points. All of these messages have multiple lip, fire, and or heart emojis because we don't ever want to underutilize our emojis. And then the last bit here. This is the last paragraph. Chad to Lori, "They arrived at the temple and they both felt they should do sealings together. They were soon seated in a sealing room facing each other. Elena looked so stunning as she smiled at him. She seemed calm, while he felt quite nervous. Their opportunity soon came to kneel across the altar from each other, and as the sealer pronounced those sacred words, James and Elena knew that they were now sealed as husband and wife for eternity. As the earthly sealing was taking place, a similar scene involving their spirits was happening on a higher plane where they kissed and unified their souls. They knew they had just begun a new journey together that was eternal and never ending." So he's just like writing all of these. He's living in a, they are living in a fantasy land when they're texting this stuff back and forth, an absolute fantasy land. So I'm keeping up with this case as well, because I certainly hope, I already see that his defense is, "Well, this was all Lori and Alex," which is Lori's brother. "Oh, this is all Lori and Alex. I didn't kill anyone. You know, wasn't Alex's phone at my house when the children were allegedly buried or whatever?" If he gets off on anything, I'm going to be so mad. I'm really going to be mad. Anyway, outside of that, I'll let you guys go. Have a wonderful week, okay? Just give yourself some grace and try to have some patience with people, okay? Nobody knows what anyone else is going through, blah, blah, blah. We say that every day, but actually, let's think about it for this week, okay? Let's just try to chill and be nice to each other, okay? Thank you for the weekend warriors that work for us. I had a lot of crap I had to get done this weekend, so I appreciate, shout out to the Lowe's staff. So have a good week, guys. Love you. Bye.